this is Justice Radio, a weekly show on WMPG with your hosts Mackenzie Kelly and Linda Small. Today we're talking with Megan Reedy, a program coordinator for the Maine Humanities Council, and also joining us is John Courtney, a former film screenings coordinator for the Portland Museum of Art. Both are doing some amazing work inside Maine's prisons, and before we hear their stories, here's a little information about your hosts.
I'm Mackenzie Kelly, a recovery coach and peer mentor coordinator of Healthy Acadia and the program director of Reentry Sisters.
I'm Linda Small, a program coordinator with Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition and ED of Reentry Sisters, an organization that specializes in helping women and girls return home from prison. And you can learn more about us on our website at reentrysisters.org. So today we're talking with our guests about how they improve and support the lives of incarcerated people and why it's important to listen, write, and watch and discuss film, art, poetry, and books.
So we'll begin with an introduction. Megan, can you please tell our listeners a little bit about you and your background and what brought you to social justice work?
Oh, first, thank you. Hello, Mackenzie. Hi, Linda. So happy to be here. I'm Megan Reedy. As Linda said, I'm part of the program staff at the Maine Humanities Council. My entry point, so we run a lot of book group programming all over the state of Maine. It's one of our core ways of engaging with folks all across the state in whatever organization or setting they find themselves. And I had the great good fortune to kind of jump in to work inside prisons just as we were starting to try some new experiments there, because the only way that we can invite folks who are currently incarcerated to book group programming is if we take that programming inside. So that's the thing that I now spend a lot of my time doing, is helping folks form book groups inside Maine's prisons.
That's great, Megan. Thank you so much. We'll get back to more information about that. So, John, you've been a longstanding volunteer inside Maine's prisons, and you've been bringing in books, right, for men and women. And you started a new organization called Shelf Life. I love that name, by the way. Can you tell us a little bit about that and your journey into, you know, getting involved inside Maine's prisons?
Yeah, thanks, Linda. Yeah, it started kind of slowly over the years. I have been a programmer for 20, 25 years from Florida, North Carolina, and then eventually to Maine at different venues I was part of, an arts programmer, a humanities programmer. And several years ago, Rachel Talbot Ross was like, hey, you should bring a film up to the Maine State Prison. And we went and showed a film there, and it was, the reception for it was really great. I'm involved with an Inside Vision, which is part of the Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition project, and that's maybe a future episode to talk about Inside Vision. And that's a lot of like visual arts and film programming and bringing in musicians and performers. But when the pandemic happened and everything shut down, we lost volunteer access to go inside and do that programming. And I was thinking of a way to support folks on the inside, and I thought, well, maybe like sending books in was something that would be pandemic proof. And I just started collecting books and from people who were downsizing or donating or getting, you know, decluttering, and sending them to various facilities around the state. And it's now grown into what is Shelf Life Project. And I've got about 4,000 books in a distribution library, and they're going to prison and jails all around the state. And we're working to expand. We've also supplied things like musical instruments and yoga props and, you know, yarn and art supplies and things like that too. So it's a resource project primarily focused on books. And I'm sitting here actually realizing this is a little bit of a reunion, because Linda and Mackenzie, I met you guys initially when you were Maine Humanities trained facilitators for a film series we did. So it's a nice little reunion to be connecting with you guys here in this new virtual space.
That's right, John. Awesome.
Yeah. I'm so glad to be back here, too, because I always love connecting with all of you. Megan, can you please describe one of your programs in prison and what the reaction has been and how it's been received?
Yeah. Oh, and John, I'm so glad you mentioned, it's such a thrill to be here with two folks who started facilitating with us. So the sort of outline of how the program works in all of the prisons we work with, I think we're in six of the prisons in Maine now. We train folks who are currently incarcerated as facilitators. And those are the folks who decide what to read, you know, talk with the groups. That they are the ones who gather the groups in the place at the time that works for them in their facility. So we work closely with those facilitators and with a staff contact of some kind. Yeah, my first, I guess the first time that I started to see the potential for what we could do was my very first training that I ran on my own up at Maine State Prison. There were 5 men in that training. Nothing quite like this had happened there before. You know, other things had happened in the vein, but nothing quite like this. And yeah, that first session still sticks out in my mind, partly because it feels emblematic of how things have gone in other places. I took in Reginald Dwayne Bett's amazing book of poems, Felon. And the first thing we did was talk about one of the poems in that book, you know, just to give folks a feeling for how that program would go. And it was just one of the most amazing conversations I've been a part of. It really blew the doors off my mind as far as, you know, what's possible. And I think the things that really struck folks that we keep hearing from people is how different it is to have a poem in the middle of a conversation, so that people are not being asked to use themselves as the thing always to talk about for all kinds of reasons. Like, I don't have to be the story I'm telling. We can talk about this other really complex, really beautiful or challenging person's work, this poem, this novel. And the tenor of the discussion, the way that everybody waits their turn and speaks really respectfully to each other and expresses their view without the feeling of having to come to a consensus or have a battle of opinions, that with poetry in the center, it always adds to everybody's understanding when people share from their own perspective. So those are like elements of the discussions that we just keep seeing, this sort of island of space when people can speak seriously in an environment, in a room where respect and no crosstalk and those kinds of things are the norm inside those rooms. Those are things we hear.
Yeah, Megan, I love that idea of the island of space, right? So you're creating sort of an environment inside what most people would think is an environment that is heavy in conflict and pain and suffering. And so I love sort of creating this little escape, right? But the escape has meaning and depth to it. And what also struck me was creating this almost third party in the room, whether it's a poem or a story. And so people who are incarcerated really don't want to focus on themselves and keep reliving, right, the process that brought them into the system in the first place. So this gives them an opportunity to have a meaningful conversation that is not centered on continually processing or bringing up what most likely are painful memories. So, you know, I love that island of space. That's fabulous. Thank you so much. And so when we're talking about, and when we talk about book groups and discussion groups, and John, that reminds me of something you said, that you have 4,000 books. How do you get 4,000 books?
Yes.
What do you do with those?
Well, I'm kind of bulging at the seams right now, so I'm definitely working on expanding my storage space. The books come from a lot of different places. Individual donors. There's a magazine editor who has been sending me their advanced copies of their books, which has been great because we're getting books that are like brand new, sometimes books that haven't even been published yet, which is really nice to put content inside correctional facilities. When I started out, I purged a lot of my bookshelves. I realized I had books that I'm like, I could go to a library any day and check this out. I don't need to have a copy of this sitting on my shelf. So I got rid of things that weren't precious to me. There's some publishers that have given me, like, they sometimes have damaged books that get dinged up. So there's 2 publishers that have sent me cases of books that they had. Megan mentioned Reginald Dwayne Bett, and I have a connection and deep appreciation for him as well. His organization mailed me like 100 copies of Felon. And when Ellen Taylor brought Dwayne up to MSP to do a reading a few years ago, we were able to bring in 100 odd copies of Felon, plus a really great writing guide that Pen America published called The Sentences That Create Us. It's like a fantastic guide to writing that's geared towards incarcerated writers. And they sent me several hundred copies of that, and we were able to bring that in. And it was great after Dwayne Betts' reading. It looked like a merch table after a concert. There were people lined up with copies of both books, getting them signed from him, you know, and talking to him and seeing that connection between an author and an audience and that engagement. And, you know, and the residents like getting, you know, his signature and then taking their books back. So they come from a lot of different places. And currently 4,000, we could expand that more. I'm about to send a lot of books out the door. So hopefully that'll free up some shelf space, but it's definitely like an ebb and flow of books that come in and go out.
Thanks, John. I was wondering, how exactly do you get people like vets to come into the prison, John? I mean, how exactly does that work?
Yeah, I know Ellen Taylor is credited for bringing Reginald up. Ellen teaches at MSP, and I think it was through university contacts that she funded that. She has an annual, I think, poetry event. So we, Shelf Life, which wasn't named Shelf Life at the time, but we basically played supporting role by bringing in like the books for that. But that was really her credit. Shelf Life has worked on a total shoestring. It's been an out-of-pocket thing. We're pursuing some funding to make that a little bit more sustainable. But we have had other authors come in. We got, I think it was a Maine Humanities grant that some went to Maine Writers and Publishers Association. And I think Gibson had Fook Tran and Tess Gerritsen and a couple authors through that that came in and did discussions. Yeah. And I have an interest in trying to pick up and run with that also and bring more authors, especially Maine authors or authors that happen to be visiting the state. And we're talking to some folks that coordinate visiting poets to see if, like, while they're in state, would they be willing to spend their afternoon coming in and doing like a discussion with residents while they're here.
Yeah, that's great, John. We'll get back to visiting folks coming into the prison in a minute. Right now, we got to do our break. You are listening to Justice Radio with your hosts, Mackenzie Kelly and Linda Small. Today, we're talking with Megan Reedy and John Courtney about bringing the humanities inside Maine's prisons through books, film, poetry, and discussion groups. And so this question is for both of you. When you bring guests in, is there a resistance?
Yeah, well, for me, like, we get to invite folks in every now and then as guests, as fellow participants in a group that's happening inside. The last time we did that really robustly, you got to come in with us, Linda, up at Maine State Prison. I guess the two things on my mind is I don't invite just anybody. I want to be sure that the person who's coming in is going to be an interested participant in the group. And so often when I ask the folks who know even the tiniest bit about the work we do in general and see it landing inside carceral facilities, they are almost all of them honored to be invited and really curious to go in. And then also, especially if they haven't been in to any prison ever, really, they're a little nervous. That's the first, like, oh, what should I wear? What's going to happen? And, you know, what about how do I get in? You know, that the sort of entry moment, the lobby and the metal detector. And the thing that I always am struck by is how, as soon as folks have been in one time, everything shifts. The whole view of the world shifts, and they want to go back and they want to get to know folks better. And sometimes they wish that they had such robust conversations elsewhere. Like, why don't we talk like this? So I think that's the other part of folks visiting that just really, like, I think you can tell, like, it always just lifts my whole soul when people do come in with me to visit, because they feel so much better, so much so enlivened afterwards, and their world is different.
Yeah, and similarly, I'm resonating with a lot of what Megan says. Like, I use the programming whenever I can bring someone in. I always jump at the chance. And so if it's a filmmaker, if it's a subject from the film, for me, not only is it better for the participants to have someone there in person, that person that comes in has a shifted experience and a shifted perspective, especially if they haven't been inside. And then they in turn become a mouthpiece and an advocate for, like, what life is like inside. They can talk about it. They might create art about it. They might write about it. They might incorporate it into a film. So I jump at those chances, and we've been able to bring in Daniel Minter and Ryan Adams, you know, incredible mural artist, to talk about his work, and Robert Shutterly that does the Americans Who Tell the Truth project. And it's always, I think, a mutually beneficial situation to have people in person. Barring that, we do virtual visits where we have people will, like, Skype in. We had, like, Jimmy Santiago Baca that joined us, like, from New Mexico, because flying him in was prohibitive. We had Speech Thomas from Arrested Development that joined us to talk about a film that he was part of. And like, so we're getting like Grammy winning and like award winning poets and filmmakers and Okwuegbokwusili and like incredible people that we definitely benefit during the pandemic, that people had a lot of spare time on their hands. And that was a nice bubble that, you know, oh sure, 45 minutes to do a Skype, you know, a Zoom Q&A. But like Megan mentioned, it's always like a transformative experience. And I always use that as an opportunity to invite people who haven't been inside before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so impressive, John. And I actually remember being a part of that film series, to be honest. I really appreciate what you brought up about people coming into the prisons and what that actually feels like. And I'm wondering for both of you, what did that feel like the first time around when you came into the prison? And what is that like now that you're going in and have been quite a few times, right?
Yeah, my first time in was at Maine State Prison. I had been interacting over Zoom with some folks at the Women's Center ahead of that. But the first time going into Maine State Prison, I just had no idea what that would be like. And then suddenly, you know, you're inside and the doors are loud and the halls are hard and the people are people. You know, I just really had no idea what to expect. But my first time in the room with the folks I was there to meet with, I felt so welcome and I felt so present, because all of a sudden the thing that I remember feeling was, oh, the quality of my presence matters so much right now. You know, we're meeting for the first time. It's a charged environment because I'm coming in for the first time. They're meeting me for the first time. Like all that first impression energy is present. Yeah, I think that was the feeling from the inside was, oh, the quality of my presence matters a lot right now. And I felt so welcome. So yeah, and also like words a little bit fail because it's such a visceral experience to suddenly see the inside of places that we're not shown. You know, they're hard to get to. Like, I remember being in college and driving past the maximum security prison in Washington State, and it was far away from the road, but bright, like deliberately scary looking. Like, but then once you're inside, it's different. And it's just such a full body experience to have an element of the landscape of the world suddenly visible, suddenly normal. In a not normal way, you know, suddenly normal is the wrong word. But suddenly there it is. It's just there. Folks are there.
Yeah. I think my first experience was at Maine State Prison 7 or 8 years ago. We brought a film called The Work there to show. And it's about a men's sort of emotional intelligence circle program. And I had, you know, it was intimidating to go inside. You've been bombarded with all these media images about like how terrible and you know, it's terrible in different ways, I think, than the media shows. And you get inside and the residents are so welcoming and appreciative of being there. And actually with that film, and then now Commissioner Liberty was the warden at MSP at the time. And then Warden Liberty actually sat with us and watched the film, which to me was like you're elbow to elbow in this room with the warden and with, you know, the guests that we brought in. And Warden Liberty then let us actually stay. We spent like 5 hours uninterrupted watching the film and then having lunch and then having the circle together. And it dissolved so many ideas and preconceptions and notions that I thought I had from reading books and watching films that just really don't capture. And just the level of connection. I there are people I met that day that I still consider friends. And unfortunately, I still see them there because they still live there. They're there every day, every night, every minute. They're there right now, which is some sobering thought. And it's kind of a thought I carry when I'm doing this work a little bit. Like I know names and faces of people that are on the end of this, and I get to see them when they're there, but they're there right now when you're listening to this.
That's such amazing commentary from both of you. Thank you so much for sharing that sort of deeply intimate look at the experience of going inside a prison that the vast majority of people never have and never even think to have. And what are you going to find when you're in there? And I think it's surprising that we find people who have deep conversations about poetry and art and write their own poetry and short stories and write, they produce their own form of art, whatever is meaningful to them. And so just to clarify for our listeners, if you both could comment on, you know, why is bringing the humanities, right, art and film and poetry and having book discussions so important, right? Do you see it making a difference? And if so, how is it making a difference?
Yeah, well, you know, hearing about all of the like really incredible people who visit, who get to come in, I also keep thinking, it makes me think over and over about the really incredible people who are already there. I think one of the things that we see happening that we feel is important about bringing the humanity, bringing, you know, books and inviting people and sort of talking about ways to talk to each other about books, which we do all over the state in libraries and domestic violence resource centers and community centers and schools, is that that's one of the things people do is tell stories and write poems and talk things over to get better understanding together. You know, more minds focused on a thing are more. There's more attention, there's more to go around. And so bringing that programming in, when we hear people say, oh, we had a discussion, it was so engaging, I forgot I was in prison. Like that's why I keep going in, because people forget for just a second that they're in prison because they're doing a thing that everybody's doing, that anybody can do when they have a little, just the tiniest bit of space and the tiniest bit of time and a book to talk about, or a thing to talk about, a story someone told. So I think that's just super important. Is that a one little tiny way, like a little tiny way of letting people remember that they're people first and prisoners second, that they're people first. And an effect that we see sometimes, like all of our facilitators have had the experience of somebody coming up sometimes, you know, after the session, even when they're part of the, we have a group running now in APOD at Maine Correctional Center, where men are, when they enter the prison system, they land there first. So it's a very high turnover. Folks don't stay there long. They don't get very many chances at this particular group. But second time around, someone comes up to the facilitator and says, I have this poem I wrote. I was inspired by our discussion last week, and I have a poem I wrote. Can I share it with you? And that effect, like, oh, I can do that too, is the other thing. Like, the more that we, that anybody can do to express their own experience, to put words on what's happening for them, the whole world wins every time somebody does that. So those are the things we, those are the reasons I keep going.
And yeah. I could probably talk about how different programming affects in different ways, but just centering on the books, I've always like loved libraries. I've had a library card since I can remember. And I think libraries are one of the best things our society has produced. It's a mutual support, shared resource, and it's a means for escape. It's a means for education, self-led education. It's a means for expanding your understanding of the universe and connecting with other people. And so I just see like a well-resourced library as just like an asset, and to see the ones on the inside, some are great and some are not so great, I would say, even within the same state. So trying to augment that and providing that resource so that someone can just get a book and escape and read, or they can advance their education, or they can research their case, or they can connect with someone else's story. But I feel unqualified to answer the question. Maybe you, Linda, or Mackenzie can say why it's important. Because you, why does it matter? I want to hear from you.
Well, thank you for that. I'm going to say, you know, for me, who also participated in a formalized, you know, higher education in prison program, which I was grateful for. But the humanities was different. I think the humanities taught me more about myself and my place in this world and my relationship to other people. I think that's what the humanities did for me, and to empathize with other people and to also not feel alone, because as you're reading these deeply intimate and personal pieces of work, whether you're looking at someone's soul through their art or reading their thoughts and feelings in a poem, in a place that is deeply isolating, it makes you feel less isolated. And so it was a beautiful form of connection for me. How about you, Mackenzie?
I mean, I couldn't have said it any better myself, Linda, but really, I think, like you said, it was a way to kind of get outside of myself as well and really connect to other people in my community. Because at one point, I wasn't just having facilitation with people who were incarcerated. It was also people who were outside in the community. And that felt like I wasn't alone and I wasn't stuck where I was. And that was just so huge to me. But it also just was bigger emotion, bigger than me. And that why it felt it, that's why it felt like such a great experience. So, I know that both of you have known many incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people. Do you think that there is anything they would like us to know about them? And that's for both of you. I know that's a pretty large question.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm speaking outside of my qualifications, but we incarcerate humanity. Like, these are other people. These are our brothers and sisters and people that there's a long, complicated discussion about why people end up in a prison. And it's a broken system, and it's people who've made choices that have run counter to laws in this country. And there's a deep understanding about, or deep misunderstanding about, what leads to that. But there are people that are from our family that are going to be coming back to our communities. There are brothers, sisters, mothers, children that live in correctional facilities in this country. I don't know, the current number is 1.8 million, which is actually down a bit from where it used to be. I also think that there are people that are going to be our future leaders. Like, the experience, like the people I've met who are incarcerated have such deep wisdom, I think sometimes tempered by that experience. I think they want to know that, I think they would want people to know that they're there, they're part of our community, they're separated from us right now. Most of them will return one day, and hopefully we can figure out ways to reintegrate them back and welcome them home and weave them back into the outside world when they come back.
Yeah, I think those are the things. I'm thinking of some of the people that I interact with regularly. I think, they want folks to know that they themselves are there, that they are, individual people with particular interests and wisdom and insights like every other individual human. Like, all of us are unique in the universe, and they're there. And and also just a second, so many things that you said, John, about that wisdom tempered by experience. I think there's something extraordinary that folks who come out well come out with, that I'm always honored to be in the presence of, including Linda and Mackenzie. Like, it's such an honor to be here. I can't tell you.
You're here.
Thank you both, Megan and John, so much for the great conversation. Our listeners, I think, have learned a lot about what's happening inside Maine's prisons, your work, and why we should all strive to do more to support incarcerated people and their families.
Hey, listeners, we have some exciting new shows coming up on Justice Radio, exploring the legislative process and how you can come involved and how Maine organizations envision justice, survivorship, and accountability.
Visit the Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for archived episodes aired on WMPG and WERU and WMHB. Big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series.